And the general trend today is to maintain that there can be excursions from these strict methods of pursuit of knowledge, excursions in the form of imagination. Very largely that is the artist's privilege to go into the realm of imagination. There can be formation of hypotheses. A hypothesis is a possible explanation of facts. So there can be intellectual operation of formation of hypotheses. There can be speculations, but these are excursions. They are not strictly scientific in character. About speculations, in fact, Newton had said, hypothesis non fingo. I cannot even imagine anything like hypothesis. A possible way of explaining in which you can speculate whether this may be an explanation or that may be an explanation. In a strictly scientific, according to him, in a strictly scientific process, even hypothesis formation he does not accept, although many scientists today accept this hypothesis formation. But you can see how in a purely strict scientific process, what is called speculation is avoided. So people may grant that there is something like a speculative process, but this speculative process is only an amusement. It does not lead you to any knowledge. It is therefore argued that anything that you arrive at by imagination, merely by hypothesis formation or by speculation, is not strictly called knowledge. And it is argued that since philosophy goes out of the totality of the whole field of experience, and this is a speciality of intellectual process, of rationality, and particular philosophy, that philosophical reason, philosophical intellectual perception, is capable of withdrawing from the total field of experience and sitting over it, as it were. This is what is called the critical functioning of the intellect. A critical functioning is to go above the whole field of experience and watch the whole field of experience and claim that this process of going above field of experience is a very superior method, and by this method whatever conclusions you arrived at is of a greater significance and a greater validity, is the claim of the philosopher as opposed to the claim of the scientist. So let us examine this aspect, because that will give us the key to the entire method of the life divine. Why Sri Aurobindo expounds the way in which he expounds the whole theme of the life divine? It is by following the philosophical method. The essentiality of the philosophical method is to take the entire field of experience and to brood over it, and then apply the canons of reasoning to judge whether such and such experience is possible or not possible. This is how philosophical thinking works. An experience is proposed, is presented, another experience is presented, a third experience is presented. A philosopher examines the claims of all these experiences. In order to arrive at a judgment whether such and such experience is possible or impossible, if possible, to what extent, and by what means can you affirm the validity of this experience or that experience. This is what is called specially philosophical method. A critical understanding of experience, a critical judgment of experience, a critical overview of the realm of experience is a speciality of the philosophical method. Sri Aurobindo says, the primary function of the intellect is understanding. To understand, whether it is scientific understanding or philosophical understanding, this is a common ground. In both the processes of science and philosophy, there is a process of understanding. Understanding is to stand below understanding, to stand under, stand below an object and to look upwards and try to grasp what it is. That is understanding. The critical understanding tries to rise above the object and then to make a judgment. Sri Aurobindo has used in the synthesis of yoga also the word overstanding. That when you arrive at a spiritual experience, intuitive experience, you are able to stand above the object and grasp and possess the object as it were from above. That is a superiority of the intuitive knowledge. You do not get subjected to, you are not standing under the weight of the object, which is the fact in this process of understanding. You are not even trying to go above it, because critical understanding is an effort always to lift oneself from understanding, to rise to a higher level of judgment. It's an effort which is very limping, it's a lame effort. Although critical thinkers believe it is one of the greatest achievements. But from the higher point of view, this is a limping experience, a limping effort. You go higher above, and from when you go above, overstanding, then the object is possessed concretely, and there can be no error in it. Both in the understanding and in the process of critical understanding or judgment, there is always a possibility of an error. But when you stand above and grasp it, there is no error. That is why it is said, intuition is free from error. If it's a true intuitive knowledge, there is no error possible. That is a mark. Very often intuition is not understood properly. Even guessing something is called intuition. But that is not true. Very often you say, oh, I guess it is so. And he says, well, I have intuition that it is so. In guessing, there is no intuition. It may be an effort at going above whatever you have understood for the moment. You are essaying possibilities. But if it is a true intuition, it is devoid of error. It is certain, sure. There is a certainty in the intuitive knowledge. That is the process of overstanding. But in this critical process, which we are now considering, which is a speciality of philosophical thinking, the true philosophical thinking is critical thinking. So long as you only observe and coordinate and deduce and induce, there is no critical thinking. It's only recording with greater sophistication. When you only record the facts as you see, it's scientific, rigorous, accurate, verifiable, repeatable, but it is not critical. A critical thinking, first of all, becomes aware of all the assumptions which are present in the observation. When I observe an object, normally I am not aware of the assumptions under which I am observing. Human beings are not so very wide awake that when they observe things, they are also aware of the context in which they are observing, the assumptions under which you are observing. I'll simply give an example. If you lock your room and go out, when nobody is present, either in the room or outside the room now, you go out and come back and you see the room intact as you had left it. You are observing, the first observation was the room in a certain position X. You go out, you come back and you see the room again in the position X. You are sure that the room was continuing to exist exactly as it was before. When you come back and when you see the room exactly as it was earlier, you assume, now I'm using the word assume, you assume that the room, or you conclude perhaps, but it's a better word is assumption, you assume that the room was exactly as it was during your absence. Now, a critical reflection would ask you the question, how do you know that the room was exactly in the same position as you left and as it appeared when you came back? This is the critical reflection. You assume it is true that when you came back it was exactly like that before. But are you sure that during your absence the room did not disappear altogether? How do you know it did not? It could have. Is there any guarantee it could not? It did not.